Hello, Mr. Kimball.
Hello, are we on? Do you hear me?
Yes, I actually just been talking away and then I realized you unmuted me.
Gosh darn, I just went and I got a couple scoops of ice cream, which I finished, and I lost track of time, and I figured, what's okay, there'll be intro music, and that'll give me some more time. And anyway, it's great to be back. This is the Andy and Men Show. I'm Andy, and versus not being Andy. And on the
other I'm Andy Kimball in the UK, and that's a man of love over there in California.
yeah, you bet. So it's always great to be back. It is great to be back on the show again, and everything's working okay. We've had some technical glitches here and there, and I'm in our alternative studio today because I'm still having issues with the studio that we were on the main board and everything I was using on what day was that? What's today? Wednesday? On Monday. Monday. So much to talk about and cover today, and we'll have a fun time doing it. There's all sorts of things going on in the world, and commentators say all sorts of crazy, ludicrous things on what might be perceived to be the other side of where we kind of come from, but we don't believe in sides, right versus left. If we're all humans, we all live on the same planet, we're all the same species. And some people say, oh, those on the left and those on the right. I think that's where problems begin, you know, when you start saying the left versus right, those on the left, those on the right. You have intelligent, well thought out conversations and exchange ideas, and that's how you facilitate change, and that's how things happen. And you talk about opinions, you lay out scenarios, you compare and contrast how things would be under certain situations, and talk about them, and you say, yeah, you know, you got a point there, or maybe if we did this, or maybe, oh, that's right, you know, you never know.
Yeah.
You know, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I heard somebody this morning on a talk show, just browsing through, and heard a guy named Dennis Prager, who I like he's a good guy. He's got some he's a conservative talk show host here in the United States, and he's got some very, I'll just come out and say it, very warped ideas about society and who we are and how we live, and don't go to college, and your kids might become gay or change their identity, or you know, college is a waste and it's a ripoff, and never go to school unless you know. Also, the heard him say this morning that without God, life is chaos. A secular cultures, meaning a life without that, you don't have a God type of thing in your upbringing or your life or where you live. You know, you live and conduct yourselves in society without within your head the fact that there is no God. And he says, well, those who, you know, without God, that's what's happening to society. And it's a secular society we're starting to live in. With no God, there's chaos. God is order. Without God, there's chaos. So I'm like, I've never had God in my life, and I think we live very orderly here. I don't know what the hell. What the hell, you know? People are some crazy. You know, yeah, and he's on the radio. This guy makes, I don't know if he makes a lot of money, but he makes money, probably a lot of money. But and he's got this bogus university called Prager University, all these YouTube videos or something where he talks, or they spew pontificate all these right-wing conservative extremist kind of thoughts and ideologies to people who care to pay attention to them. But, you know, anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, that's all I have to say about my... And by the way, you would think I would think this guy who I'm talking about, Dennis Prager, is actually a really good guy, even though I completely disagree with any... I think he goes through life with blinders on, that's his issue. But he's a really good guy. He truly, truly is. You know, take that for what it's worth.
I think sometimes, you know, it's so easy to judge somebody's character based on their opinion, which is not a good thing to do.
No.
And,
I agree.
We're not all going to agree.
It's true. You're right.
Thanks.
You know, I put a question out there. When did I put this question out there? What was the week? I forget. Last week.
I forget.
Didn't we skip some shows last week, I think? Didn't we?
Yes, last week. I was poorly with the whole coughing virus, and it was a crazy time. And yes, now we're back. Second episode this week.
Did you hear about that? Did you hear about that pastor that got fired for mentioning for that Trump was how society put a liar and a deceiver in the office, and he's throwing a sermon, and he got fired from his church.
What?
Yeah, let's take a listen to this. Listen to this.
Okay.
at the Stewart's Draft Baptist Church in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley.
Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you all here and worship together.
This Sunday service is led by a pastor who took the place of this pastor.
I don't want to start controversy. Apparently, God does. And I'm just a messenger.
Taking his place, after this outdoor sermon during the worst of the COVID pandemic, just a few months before the 2020 presidential election.
Why will we not finally admit that we have put a liar in our White House? Why will we not finally admit that that is Antichrist?
And William Kopp, who had been the spiritual leader of this evangelical Southern Baptist church for 14 years, wasn't anywhere near done talking about then-President Donald Trump.
18,000 fact-checked lies in 1,100 days is more than just unacceptable. It is more than just sin. It is more than just wrong. It is demonic.
And then Kopp added this.
And you can't deny it, because Jesus says it. And if you choose to deny that, then you choose to deny Jesus. You can't have it both ways. You can't support the lie and claim the truth. You can't support the Antichrist and support the Christ.
This is William Kopp and his wife Carol today. After you made...
Anyway.
Wait a minute. Hang on. Did I hear that right? Was he talking about Trump being the Antichrist or,
yeah.
or Biden?
Well, not on how... Not being the Antichrist. But in the philosophy of, you know, people, you know, praising God and Christ and all things good and so forth, and then turn around and put Trump in the White House.
Right. I see. Okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. Another thing I want to play here is I was talking to her. I put a question out as to why, you know, I've got nothing against the GOP as in the platform. As a matter of fact, I'm independent. I sort of supported Republicans. I support Democrats. Probably lean more towards Democrats. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's the way my life is and my thinking is. But I've supported Republicans based on who they are as people and what their and their integrity and what they mean and what they could bring to the table and what they can bring to other people's lives, whether Republican or Democrat, right? But my question is, what is, because there's so much chaos going on within the Republican Party right now, and you know, and the countdown to Trump's indictment, which I want to talk about in a couple of minutes, and some of the things that came out regarding some text messages that were sent before Biden's inauguration, which I want to get to. But anyway, so what is the question? Is what is the attraction to the GOP? What, you know, now as it stands now, you know. So let's take a listen. On second thought, maybe not. Anyway, as
I thought I'd walk into a time warp. Oh my god!
Yeah,
it happens. It happens.
Yeah, I did put that that question out, and I got some good answers out here. You know, I got some answers, but. Where are the answers? Answers to my question. Somebody from somewhere, give me the answers to... I think I got it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I do. Oh, you know what? Do you remember not Godspell, that was a great play. Do you remember High School Musical? How can I come up with High School Musical and say Godspell?
The movies? Not the TV series.
Yeah, High School. Yeah, remember that?
Troy Bolton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fabulous. And all those songs.
Yeah.
And remember?
Oh, great.
Remember Troy Bolton? Wasn't that fun? Weren't they fun?
Yeah.
Well,
I love
those movies. Weren't they good? Yeah, I remember because my kids were, I guess it was years ago when they came out, but they were, you know, I enjoyed them too. I mean, this is an adult. I thought they were kind of fun.
They were kind of like a modern day Greece for the younger generation, weren't they, really?
Yeah. They really were.
Yeah.
They really were. But anyway, do you remember the actress who played, what was her name in the movie? What was her name? Troy Bolton's girlfriend.
Ding, 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 ding. I know, Vanessa Hudgens.
Yeah, but what was her name in High School Musical? Do you remember?
Oh, Gabriella?
Yes! Oh, my God! Good for you! Yes!
Okay. Yeah,
oh,
she's awesome.
Wow. Hmm.
She does some great things.
Yeah, she's a very talented singer. And
yes, she is.
And an actress as well. Well, it's her birthday today.
Is it?
It's her birthday. I figured we would to pay tribute to Vanessa Hudgens. I mean, have we ever done that before on this show? No, but it is her birthday today, and she is very talented, and she's got a great song called "Sneaker Night." And I thought in tribute to her and a happy birthday, and wishing her warm wishes from here on Coast to Coast, the Andy and Mandy. So we would play a Vanessa Hudgens song, and then I actually did reach out, and we're going to see if we can get her on the show. Obviously not today, but we'll see if we work on that. She's here in California, and we'll work on that. But let's do a and we have to tell
magical.
Her. Yeah, because we got to tell her that you listen. You got to come on the show because look, we did a birthday tribute to you, and that you got to come on. How can you not come on the show?
Yeah,
and Aunt Gabriella, Troy Bolton's girlfriend, to come on our show. It'd be so much fun. So let's hear the song. Vanessa Hudgens, the song's called Sneaker Night.
Birthday to you, girl. That is a cracking song. Absolutely love
it. Isn't it kind of cool?
Oh, yeah. I just got on Spotify and added that to one of my playlists.
Oh, nice.
So good.
Yeah. Nice. I'm glad you did that.
Yeah.
And hopefully our listeners did the same. You know, wishing Vanessa a happy birthday. Yes. So anyway, it's her birthday today. I know some other musicians whose birthday is today, but I think everybody would know who Vanessa Hudgens would be.
Oh, she's so cool.
She's really cool. She's done some, you know, things that were questionable in her way back when. She took some help, pictures of her inappropriately clothed, shall we say, that leaked.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool. I remember that. And but anyway.
You notice how they do that with a lot of female celebrities, though, you know? It's kind of like
why not target them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? I'm still waiting for that picture of me and the Mankini to, you know. Anyway.
we all are love.
Are we though? It's also, I don't know if you remember the band Marilyn Manson?
Yeah, Marilyn Manson. Yeah.
Tim Scholes, who's part of that band's birthday today. Beth Orton, who's, she's a singer-songwriter from your part of the world.
Yes, Beth Orton, legend. Okay. Who else?
It's her birthday. Sophie Monk.
Okay.
Pop stars, you know, she was pretty popular. Australian number one single, Poison. Alex Gascarth, who's also from your side of the world, I think. He's a guitarist from the band All Time Low. They had an album that peaked at number one in the UK chart and number two in the US chart. And, of course, Vanessa Hudgens, of course.
Oh, well, happy birthday to everybody. That is just fantastic. Hope they're having an amazing day or night or wherever they are in the world.
Yes, absolutely. So those are birthdays that are today in the music world, and we could have picked any profession, but today we picked music. Why not? We're both musicians.
Yes.
What the hell, right?
Oh, we love all music, yes.
Don't we? I think I found the right clip here. I put that question out and got several answers, and here's, is this one of them?
Oh.
Wait a minute, I may hit the wrong one again.
Having spent most of my life as a very staunch conservative, I feel like I can answer this one pretty well. It's fear. I used to listen to Hannity and Bortz and Rush and all those people, and it was just, they peddled fear. It was fear of anything that challenged your worldview. It was fear of people that don't look like you, that don't believe like you, that don't act like you. They hide behind the Second Amendment and consider themselves strong because they hold guns. But it's because they're weak-minded and they're fearful. I remember when Barack Obama was elected in 2008, I had been convinced that that was the end of democracy. I genuinely woke up the next day sad because our democracy was going to end, because this Manchurian candidate who was, I remember Hannity talking all the time about how he was bred by Saul Alinsky to take over the economy. None of it happened. It's just fear. They fear change. Liberals are open-minded, conservatives aren't.
Anyway, how are you doing? How are you doing?
I am doing much better than I was. Thank you very much.
You sound a whole lot better. You sound a lot
Thank
better.
Thank you. I like to laugh a little easier now, which is great. There's nothing worse than when you can't laugh or speak for, like, more than 30 seconds without coughing and spluttering. So, yes, all good.
All good. All right.
Yes.
You know, there's something that you might want to keep an eye on, folks, everybody, when it comes to seeing or hearing news regarding charges against the January 6th defendants. Know what that is? I don't know.
Oh.
No, anyway.
The
Oath Keepers, you know, the conservative group who spearheaded and met and had meetings with various other groups about what they're going to do on January 6th, the night before the insurrection occurred. And, of course, Trump called everybody to Washington on January 6th. He said, we're going to have it. It's going to be wild. Everybody come January 6th. The Oath, you know, many, 300-some indictments and convictions regarding the people who were involved in trying to overtake our government, tear down our democracy, and illegally invade the Capitol building. But when you have the convictions of the Oath Keepers on, they're convicted of seditious conspiracy, and that is like the headline charge, right? That's when all these people get charged, and, you know, conspiracy, and that got most of the attention, and for good reason. But when you got those seditious conspiracy convictions of the leaders of the Oath Keepers, I think there are two members who are considered leaders or whatever. You should also know that those two members of the Oath Keepers, as well as all of the other fellow defendants who were charged in that same trial, what, 300 some now, I think, they're also convicted. This is kind of interesting. They're also convicted of a different felony, right? The felony is called obstructing an official proceeding. In other words, they're convicted of a felony charge for preventing Congress or trying to prevent Congress from doing its job that day, which was certifying the presidential election, if we remember that day of January 6th, right? So the actual crime is called obstructing an official proceeding. That's a felony, right? And that charge of obstructing an official proceeding that hasn't just been used against these three organized, groups like the Oath Keepers, I think there's three, I forget, 300 and some different defendants from January 6th have also been charged for that specific felony statute, which is obstruction of official proceeding. That's actually what they were guilty of, right?
Yeah.
So that specific statute is going to be the likely felony charges that could be brought against Donald Trump himself. We keep talking about the countdown to indictment. In other words, Donald Trump could be brought up on charges of obstruction of an official proceeding. He said, we're going to march down to the Capitol. I'm going to go with you. Of course, he didn't go with him. I'm going to march to the Capitol. He brought all those people there. You know, Pence has to do his job. If you were worth his salt, he would stop this thing. That is attempting to obstruct an official proceeding, trying to prevent Congress from doing their job. And that's why it's worth memorizing that phrase, because probably I'm willing to bet most people did not know the felony, the law that actually says, what are you being indicted for? I'm being indicted for the obstruction of official proceeding. That it boom, just stop, start right there, right? It's worth keeping an eye out on that specific felony charge that has been used hundreds of times now, currently, to get hundreds of convictions thus far against the January 6th defendants. So,
right.
Interestingly enough, in Washington, D.C., Federal Appeals Court, which is a panel of three appeals court judges that started considering whether that specific charge should have centrally been nullified when it comes to January 6th, or whether it should be allowed to use that charge against January 6th defendants. They actually they appealed that. You can't charge these defendants with that? What were they trying to do in the Capitol that day? That's sad day. Lower level district court in D.C., there's one judge. This gets interesting. There's one judge who was appointed by none other than Donald Trump, who has ruled that the felony charge, again, obstruction of an official proceeding, can't be used against the January 6th defendants.
What? Why?
Yeah,
what?
No, this is absolutely true. I'm not making this up. This is not a movie script. Yes.
Right.
So lots of other judges, including judges in that same D.C. district court, have said it's fine to use that charge, and in fact have overseen trials in which it has been used to secure those convictions. But there's one Trump judge who says it shouldn't be used. A Trump-appointed judge. When that Trump-appointed judge ruled that way, the Justice Department appealed. And so, this past Monday, which was happening during our show, it was the next highest level of the court, the Federal Appeals Court, which heard oral arguments on whether or not that specific felony charge can essentially be vitiated for the January 6th defendants, and that could have very wide consequences for everybody, right? All the way down the line. We're talking about hundreds of people who invaded the Capitol building, right? So not only for people who've already been convicted of that charge, but also people who are facing charges. Because, can they be charged of the obstruction of an official proceeding if they invaded our Capitol building, they tried to stop Congress from doing their job? Can they be charged for doing that? This one Trump judge said, no, they can't be charged for that.
I don't understand the logic in that. Right, okay. What is going on? I don't understand.
Yeah, unbelievable. So, it's unbelievable. And it doesn't stop there. Okay. I'm digging up stuff. I'm looking through my notes. Let me just organize this a little better here. Here we go. All right. Ready? Okay.
I'm ready.
In addition to Congress, there's a, let me back up a little bit. Congressman named Ralph Norman of South Carolina. Our caller calls in from the Nile River there. She's rolling and she's floating around the universe and she's parachuting out of airplanes and she's
good old Lisa.
Yeah, is she in South Carolina, North Carolina, right?
North Carolina. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I was going to say. If okay. So this is safe to say then. Okay. So Ralph Norman of South Carolina. You're not going to be this when I tell you.
Okay.
Ready?
I'm ready.
He called for martial law, calling for the U.S. military to install Trump in power, even after the January 6th happened.
Why?
There's also a Republican congressman from Tennessee telling the White House chief of staff at the time, Mark Meadows, that Republican legislators should just overrule the vote in their seats and proclaim Trump the winner. So,
right then, okay.
Yeah, Congressman Mark Green of Tennessee told the White House chief of staff that should happen in various Republican-controlled states because he described a guest on. There's a show we've talked about here every once in a while called Newsmax. It's a right-wing extremist news platform from somewhere in Fox, right? So this guy, Mark Green of Tennessee, saw a guest on Newsmax that said it was legally possible for the president to declare martial law and stay in power. And I'll wait till I hone in on this, what I'm getting to. You'll see. I'm not done. Okay. So there's a North Carolina congressman, Murphy, was it?
Go ahead.
Craig? Not Craig. Give me a second. Greg Murphy.
Right.
Okay, he's North Carolina, all right? Pushing the same strategy as Green, cut and pasted from a right-wing website that also proclaimed that the president can declare martial law and keep himself in power. So, and this is all happening after January 6th. This is happening after Pence, you know, and this whole thing about certifying elections is a ceremony. It's a ceremony, right? Biden won the election. You know, if they never met, he'd still be president. It's ceremonial. It's official, whatever you want to call it, right? It's a ceremony.
Right.
Biden, the election was won by Joe Biden by a lot, right? Both in popular vote and also electoral vote. So, so Ted Budd of North Carolina suggested to White House Chief of Staff at the time, Mark Meadows, that the voting machines are. Okay, you ready for this? All right.
Okay.
The voting machines had all been rigged by George Soros. That the congressman is actually not going back to Congress, but is going back to Congress as a senator. And last month's election in North Carolina, Ted Budd, he's going to be a senator. So he goes and tells Mark Meadows, and again, this is after January 6th, right around January 17th, 3 days before Biden's inauguration, that the voting machines were rigged by George Soros.
Okay.
I'm not done.
Okay. Okay.
There was another right-wing favorite. I'm really not too good with names, but I know he's from Arizona. Let me look at my card. Who's the right-wing guy from Arizona? I made a note here. Okay, got it. Paul Gosar, Arizona. You ready for this? This guy sent I hope you're sitting on the edge of your seat here with all this, okay? He sent the White House chief of staff a link to supposed evidence of election rigging. He got the supposed evidence and forwarded the citation to Mark Meadows in the White House. The blog that he got the information from, this is a blog that he got information from and forwarded to the White House chief of staff, all right?
Okay.
I'm sorry. You ready for this? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Come on. Ready? All right. The blog which a congressman got information from to send to the White House chief of staff to forward to the president was called "Some Bitch Told Me."
No way.
That is the name of the blog that he cited to the White House chief of staff to justify whatever means were necessary to keep Trump in power. Some bitch told me that's the name of the blog that he sent to the White House chief of staff to say, so Trump stay in power. Look what I dug up from some bitch.
No way.
Some bitch told me, look what I got. Look what I found. He should become partners with the pillow guy.
Oh, I love it. That is so funny.
Okay, we're not done.
Okay.
Ready? Okay. Okay. Now, this is all part of our countdown to indictment. I think we titled this show or somewhere or some shows countdown to indictment. And I want everybody to know what train track we are on here. Okay, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio. Jim Jordan is a former way back attorney, wrestling champ in high school. Some of you may have seen him in the congressional hearings. He's just kind of yeah. I think we even played some of his tapes with when he's questioning Fauci over some of his policy regarding the COVID. Anyway, that's Jim Jordan. I still have the clip here. Maybe I'll play it later. Okay, so Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio texted a detailed plan for how Vice President Mike Pence could overturn the election and proclaim Trump to have been reelected when he wasn't. Right? Obviously. He didn't win. Right? Trump lost. Okay? So,
yeah.
Jim Jordan is expected to become chairman of the House Judiciary Committee next year when Republicans narrowly take over the Congress majority. Right? So this guy who's going to become the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee sent a detailed plan for how Vice President Pence could overturn the election. The American people. And he's going to be head of the House Judiciary Committee. What the fuck?
This is like something out of a storybook. Okay.
I'm telling you. And I've been, you know how I've been talking about countdown to indictment for the last month or two, or right? And I'm, behind the scenes, I want you to know what I'm doing behind the scenes to kind of narrow the pathway to our countdown to when we think an indictment is going to happen, and which we're going to be announcing, right, not this episode, but soon. But I want you to know where we are headed here, all right? We talked about going behind the headlines, reading news stories, going to find out what's going on, okay, so there's no record of Mark Meadows for ever replying to all these messages. And oh, by the way, I don't know if I told you, these are all text messages that were sent to Mark Meadows days before the inauguration of Joe Biden. Right?
Wow.
What essentially happens, January 6th comes and goes. January 20th is when Biden becomes president. So we got all these people that I'm reciting to you that are pulling their hair out, trying to figure out how do we keep Trump in power? My God, the inauguration is a few days away. How do we stop that from happening? What do we do? Marshall, let's bring in the military. And these are people who are reelected, one of which is going to become a senator, one of which is going to become the head of the House Judiciary Committee. That's just going to be running the Congress.
Goodness. I have never heard anything like it.
Welcome to America.
Well, they pull every card out of the hat.
Now, in all honesty, now let me say this. Mark Meadows was the chief of staff at the time, right, under Donald Trump, who did reply to lots of these messages, but in some cases he does reply, and there are also references that suggest that he was communicating with many of these members of Congress separately or on encrypted messaging apps, like the one you and I used to go back and forth on at night when we're – oh, excuse me, like the one you and I go back and forth on at after this and those would be messages that, as far as we know, the January 6th investigation has not yet obtained any of those. We don't know anything about them, so I can't really comment. Even though I've tried. But stay tuned for what we turn up. A congressman of my home state of Pennsylvania, a guy by the name of Scott Perry, exchanged so many texts with Mark Meadows, full of bullshit conspiracy theories about Italian. Ready for this? This is absolutely fact. Okay. Stay on the edge of your seat here. We're not done with this yet.
I'll be on the floor in a minute.
Scott Perry of Pennsylvania exchanged so many texts with Mark Meadows that were so full of this crap, one being an Italian satellite rigging voting machines. And I am not making this up, Amanda. This is not a storyline for a movie. It could be. I don't think we can make a movie this good.
Oh, my goodness.
Right?
Right?
We have to ask our friend Kevin Michaels, who produced movies and TV shows from the musician. We have to give, I have to give him this. I want to tell him about this and see if he wants to make a movie of it. Italian satellites rigging voting machines, and the CIA director being in cahoots with the British government, your government, Amanda, yes, the British government, to steal the election for Biden. Why in the world would the CIA work with the British government to steal the election for Biden? I'm asking.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, come
on. You're over there. Well, why would the British government steal the election for Joe Biden?
Well, as far as I know, we're not huge fans of Trump over here, so I don't understand.
But they actually, this guy, Scott Perry, in addition to saying the Italian satellites were rigging voting machines, but also the CIA director was working with your government there in the UK to steal the election.
Right.
There was so much bullshit. I'm not going to, I can go on. I'm just going to narrow this down. There was so much bullshit from this guy from my home state of Pennsylvania, Scott Perry, that, Talking Points memos have a whole separate article dedicated just to Scott Perry's text to and from the White House chief of staff. In other words, all these texts are starting to be uncovered now by the January 6th investigative committee. There is so many texts from Scott Perry that they're isolating to be its own separate thing away from these other things I'm talking about here. It could be a book.
Hmm.
Now,
I wonder what his theories are behind that, why the British government would be helping. I mean, come on.
Yeah, so would I. And I want to look into that further. And we joined the U.S. and U.K. uniquely on the show, and it's something we will look into on the show. So the congressman, he chairs a committee. Okay, he chairs a committee called the House Freedom Caucus, which is a powerful group of far-right extremist Republicans whose power is set to grow next year because they're going to dominate the Congress, even though it's a razor-thin House majority.
Yeah.
But it also will be the entity that determines who gets to be the next Republican Speaker of the House, which is a different matter because Kevin McCarthy is in contention for that post, and it's not going so smoothly for him. We'll see what happens there. But so many of the text messages that have been reported and they're finally gathering, they've been coming in drips and drabs. But the difference is that we now know. This is what's been unearthed. Mm-hmm. We now know, we can see all these text messages together, but also these guys are going to be in charge of the U.S. Congress, in charge of the U.S. House in just a few weeks, folks, right? Or a month, whatever it is, right? So which means, among other things, that, it's going to be unbelievable. So the people I'm just talking about here are going to be a majority of the House. By razor thin. And what that means, razor thin, it's important that we know that because any time in history where the majority was so thin, whether Democrat or Republican, we got very few things passed because of, it's just a few people, it's a few seats, that's all it is. But we have a good majority in the Senate, and I think that'll make a difference. So,
okay.
As I said, this was January, 17th of last year. So these text messages are going by, the inauguration is the 20th, right? That's when Biden took office. But just to get your head around what was going on so soon, so post-inauguration, just 3 days before Joe Biden was set to be and become the next president of the United States, which is January 20th, right?
Crazy.
So
11
days before January, so what's that, 12? Let me see, 20... 17th, 11, 12, 11 days.
Yeah.
I wonder, math. 11 days before January 17th or January 6th, when the pro-Trump mob stormed into Congress and tried to prevent Congress from certifying Joe Biden's election as the new president. So on that day, January 17th, it was already a week and a half since January 6th, right?
Right.
And 3 days until the inauguration. So on that date, here's a text message. Let me pull it out here. Here's a text message that was sent to Donald Trump's White House chief of staff again, Mark Meadows. It says, and I'm going to quote, this is the text message, right? Mark.
Marky Mark.
Marky, this is what I have to say. in seeing what's happening so quickly and reading about the Dominion lawsuits attempting to stop any meaningful investigation, we're at a point of no return in saving our republic, exclamation point. And exclamation point, you know, was in all caps. In other words, exclamation point, all caps. Again, this is part of the quote. Last hope is invoking martial law. Please urge the president to do so. So, so 3 days before Joe Biden's inauguration, White House of Chief of Staff Mark Meadows is getting this text message urging the president, President Trump, to invoke martial law. Spelled, ready for this? This is how
I have the
text. I want to spell martial law for you, okay?
Martial
law, M A R S. Martial law is spelled M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L, as in the department store. As like the person sending this law thinks there's a Marshall's law, like maybe a Macy's law or a Ross Dress for Less law, maybe even a TJ Maxx law or Best Buy law. Your Best Buy law that could be invoked as well.
Wow.
So what he means is martial law, which is M-A-R-T-I-A-L. He wanted him to suspend the Constitution and put the military in charge to rule by force.
I've heard a lot of stories about things like that.
Oh, yeah. We talked about it on the show. He said, our last hope is invoking martial law. Please urge the president to do so. Again, 3 days before Biden becomes president, calls out the troops to use military forces, weapons of war, against American people in order to stop the inauguration of a new president. And instead,
This is craziness.
Yeah, this all happened. This actually happened. I'm not making this stuff up. So this is a message not sent by White House Chief of Staff. It's a message sent to him, right? So, you know, I bet that what you can easily say about the White House Chief of Staff gets all kinds of weird spam text messages from overeager Trump supporters and right-wing extremists and, you know, the whole deal there, right? I mean, whoever sent this doesn't even know how to spell martial law, right? So how serious could it be? he wants the department store to come in and take over the presidency. Okay, now, the message, though, was not from some random guy who just guessed the phone number of the White House Chief of Staff. This text message was sent from a sitting member of the United States Republican Congress, Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina. On January 17th of last year, 3 days before Biden's inauguration, Congressman Ralph Norman was texting Trump's White House Chief of Staff, urging President Trump to call out the U.S. military to use military force against civilians in order to keep Trump in power.
Wow.
He's a sitting member of Congress when he sent that message, and he still is going to be. Still is today.
I'm so confused.
He's reelected by a lot. This guy. He wants Marshall Department Store law. He was reelected by 2-1 margin. Mm-hmm.
All of this on Trump's behalf is just phenomenal. I have never known such things.
Yeah. It's unreal. I mean, knowing. This is what Ralph Norman, reelected by 2-1 margins, going to be back in Congress, was advocating for the White House, right? Suspend the Constitution, to take power by force, put troops in the streets, knowing he was advocating that this is one thing, knowing that he and his party are going back to Congress as a new majority party there for the next year.
Well, I mean, it's actually quite an insult if you think about it. So the people who legitimately voted to not have Trump in power, it's a major slap in the face for the American people to say, you're not trusted, and, you know, you made the wrong decision. Because ultimately, all of that reflects that. By saying it's a rig, it's just them covering their own asses to say, well, hey, you know, this man should be in power. You didn't vote wrong, but truly you did, because, you know.
You know what? This is something different. I'll tell you why this feels like something different.
Okay.
Right? They're a minority party, Republicans, today. Come January, when the new Congress takes hold, what are they going to do with their power when they really have it? When you've got people thinking the Italian satellites were rigging voting machines, that the CIA was in cahoots with the British, that Jewish lasers from space were firing on people, whatever it is. These people are going to be the majority rule in United States Congress. What the fuck?
I think we're, I've got to be honest, I think we're living in very frightening times. When you think about everything that's been stirring up these past 6 years, if not more, in every country, even, not just your country and mine, Andy. I mean, it's actually frightening. It's frightening to think how things are twisting around and being manipulated. And I mentioned the word chaos so many times on the show because we're living in chaos. It's like right now in this country, there's so much of it. Like, you know what I feel sorry for right now in the UK is our nurses are going on strike. You remember I told you that, so we've had the, what we have over here is the Royal Mail. It's called the Royal Mail, which is a delivery, you know, of your mail, your letters and things like that and parcels and whatever. So they've been going on strike for various reasons, and then we had the rail strike as well, and now we have nurses going on strike, but they have a very, very legitimate reason, and they've been under a lot of strain since this whole COVID thing. I mean, this has been an ongoing issue for many years now, where nurses are so underpaid and overworked, and, you know, they're trying to fulfill a forever expanding NHS system, and They're just not getting the right amount of money for all the effort, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that they put into their work. And so they're actually at this point now where it's like breaking point for them. We've got too many patients, not enough nurses being hired to care for everybody. People's health is going down the pan because they can't provide the right health care as soon as it's needed. And so, rightly so, they've gone on strike. But of course, then that has a bitter taste for the UK public because we're all like, okay, so what's going to happen to our appointments now and our treatments and all that kind of thing? So what they're doing is, they by law, they have to still provide critical care for like babies and surgery that needs doing. That's a life or death situation. And I think things to do like cancer and stuff like that. However, other things that you have been on a waiting list for, maybe it's going to be even more delayed. That's not so serious. You know, there's going to be a lot of angry people right now at these nurses going on the strike, but they're at the point where they don't know what to do because they can't cope with the amount of hours that they've got to put in. You know, it's difficult, and they keep approaching the government about, please give us a pay raise to at least help with the situation. If you're not going to hire more nurses, you know, we deserve that. So it's a kind of bittersweet taste at the moment, and that side of things. So it's going to be interesting to see where all this goes with how this is going to play out now and how much is going to be held back because of this over the next week or so, or even forever. I don't know how long this is going to go on for. But yeah, it's like I said, since we've come out of Brexit and now this COVID thing, the UK is in absolute chaos. And I've never seen so many prime ministers step down.
It's unreal, isn't it?
Government.
Yeah. What is life like? I mean, every day you go out in the street and conduct your life, but what's the feel? What's the, you know, what are you feeling from other fellow Brits? And what is the... you know, is people walking around going, oh my God, what are we doing? Or is it pretty much?
Well, I would love to practice being a mind reader because I think that'd be very helpful right now because we don't actually talk much about it unless it's like each other, like if you're sitting in a queue or something and you're chatting with somebody or, you know, you strike up a conversation with somebody sometimes, but in all honesty, I don't know what the general public's idea of things are. If we go on my opinion, I'm sure there's many people that feel the way I do. I have family members who feel the way I do. So I think it's safe to say that right now, the UK people, whether they express it enough or not, are really disappointed with government and everything we've been through. We're lacking the same trust that we had a couple of years ago or a few years ago. It's not surprising, is it, with all this stuff going on? We're told we're being looked after, and we got our best interests in their hearts. But I don't necessarily think that all of that is true. It's so easy to preach it. Oh, let's help these people. Let's change this. Let's do that. And although their intentions may be very sincere at the time, to actually see those things through is a very rare thing. And I think when Boris Johnson stepped into his role and he made all these promises, I got to hand it to the guy. He pretty much saw through a lot of the things he promoted, which was the first for a long time that I've seen of any prime minister, whether we liked it or not. You know, he said, this is what I'm going to do, and he pretty much saw through so many things. And I find that quite impressive. I never truly got completely on board with the guy because there was some things that just didn't sit well with me. But I'm like you, Andy. You know, I don't actually necessarily stick to one party my entire life because they're not going to give everything that you need as an individual or as a society. So, you know, I've jumped from party to party depending on what they put across, what they kind of promise, what's going to benefit us as a society, a country, whatever. And, you know, so yeah, my views and voting has changed over the years for sure. But to have these battles on who's better than the other is ridiculous. What they should be focusing on is what these guys can provide for us at that time, what our country needs, what we need personally, you know.
Yes.
Instead of defending one side all the way, for what purpose?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. What's going on here? To a point, you don't hear as much about it now as you did. Maybe since the January 6th committee came out with so much evidence and testimony about what happened on January 6th. Is that many people here, as you know, have thought that this whole thing about Trump in January, you know, investigating the people involved in January 6th and the raid on Mar-a-Lago was all politically motivated, which it wasn't. It was motivated by law, which is what we are a country of here in the United States. It's supposed to be, you know, the law is the law, no matter what one's position is, no matter what they do, if it doesn't matter. And when there's enough evidence, somebody suspected or a group or a company or an entity violated laws, then it needs to be handled as presented. So, you know, in our Constitution, we are a country of laws, and this thing about the going after Trump is not a political motivation. This guy is a liar. He's a cheat. He's a scam artist. He's a grifter, and it's there's so much evidence of his criminal behavior as in business and in the White House when he was president. And to sit by and just say no, everything he did was fine, this is all, it's all witch hunt, is ludicrous. It's wrong.
Exactly. For what purpose would it be a witch hunt? Why would we all just sit here and say, okay, he's a bad man, let's decide just to pick on him because he's Trump?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There has to be a legitimate reason that we feel strongly as a people or a collective who have these strong feelings towards him, that, you know, he's doing something wrong in their eyes to bring this all about.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody just forms that opinion out of nowhere either, you know. He's upset a lot of people and basically harmed a lot of people from a lot of the carelessness that he's expressed casually whilst being in power. Like this, it sticks out in my mind all the time with the COVID thing, telling people to drink bleach. That made
a
joke.
Yeah.
But what president stands up there and jokes about something as serious as that?
Yeah, and he, but when he said it, he wasn't joking. you know, later he had to backpedal, right? When he said it, he said,
right.
And I heard blacklight. I heard blacklight can destroy this thing, and Lysol, yeah, inject Lysol, unbelievable.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just goes to show the stupidity of somebody that we put in the White House. There's a guy by the name of Glenn Kirshner. He's a former prosecutor who's been very closely involved in tracking on a daily basis what's going on the leak from a legal standpoint, and of course he's got the expertise to do so about the potential Trump indictment here. And I'm going to play a clip if I can find it. You know me, da-na-na-na. Watch me play the bells again. anyway, this is, I think I got it right. Let's see. Here's Glenn Kirshner. Again, you know, coming back to our countdown to the indictment of Donald Trump.
Glenn Kirshner here with more Trump troubles. Yesterday was not a good day in court for Donald Trump. The very special master that he picked, Judge Raymond Deary, said to Trump's criminal defense attorneys, I need you to tell me something. If you want me to do the review that Donald Trump has demanded I do, you need to tell me precisely what documents, if any, Donald Trump declassified. You know what Donald Trump's attorneys told Judge Deary? We're not telling you, because that would make it more difficult for us to defend our client when he's indicted. You know what, friends? This may be the first time I ever agree with anything one of Donald Trump's criminal defense attorneys said, and that is that Donald Trump will be indicted.
And so begins our countdown to indictment.
Yeah.
So begins our countdown to indictment.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to lead him away in handcuffs from Mar-a-Lago. Wouldn't that be something? I think they'll give him respect. I don't think they'll do that.
Because Trump had such a way of being able to see things through.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I think he could have done so many other wonderful things for the country. He did some good. He didn't do all bad. But, I mean, mm-hmm. He just had that power and influence to be able to work some magic. And, yeah, it's quite disappointing with how that all turned out.
It is. It is. Are we truly down to about a minute and a half? Oh, my God, Amanda, this hour went by.
Wow.
What fun. What fun.
I know.
What fun.
I know.
Not as silly and raunchy as we usually get, but I just, you know, we got to begin our, you know, we're waiting to do this, you know, countdown to indictment, just starting the clock, so to speak, when this is all going to happen, and we're going to be closely monitoring it and, you know, keeping our eyes
sometimes
on top of this thing.
Sometimes it goes that way. Yeah. Sometimes it goes that way with the show.
You know, there's a singer-songwriter, which many of us know. We all knew the band, not the Beatles. We all know the band. Claude Puissels and Nash, right?
Yes, yeah.
Right? Sweet Judy Blue Eyes and so forth. Claude Puissels, Nash and Young, Neil Young. Stephen Stills happens to be, just as an artist himself, and he's got an amazing background in what he did even before Claude Puissels and Nash. He is an incredible guitar player. And a very, very talented singer-songwriter wrote a lot of the tunes that made Claude Puissels and Nash famous. They will never be playing again together, by the way. We'll never see them play. Graham Nash and David Crosby had this falling out that I'm not going to get into that now. But anyway, we will, in all likelihood, never see Crosby, Stills, and Nash tour together again or play live together again.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, isn't that something? But, so, anyway, Stephen Stills, if I can find Stephen Stills in here, look up Stephen Stills, anyway, my point being, I was going to try to play a Stephen Stills tune here to finish our show out with, but I can't find one. Gotta be one here somewhere.
Oh, no.
I thought it'd be, you know, just because... I'll get it. Well, maybe remind me Friday's show. I can't. Yeah, you know? Do you know we're within 10 days of Christmas?
I know. You
and
know, I've
birthday,
not even finished Christmas shopping.
I haven't done a thing. I haven't put a tree up. Nothing here. Nothing. Zero.
What?
We've done zero. Nothing. Nothing here at all.
Oh my goodness! I remember last year your Christmas tree situation.
My gosh. Yeah, man, oh man, oh man. Yeah, I think like last year, it was like last minute, right? I think you remember?
It was. It really was last minute, yeah. Funny.
Yeah, and it looks like this year's in going to be right up there. I just have not paid attention to it. I mean, there's things, people have lights and, you know, all that up. I just have not done a darn thing. Nothing.
Nah, it's okay.
Yeah,
it
haven't you
that much?
I like to take part in the holidays and feel the mood and the festivities and all that. Anyway, we got a roll. Our next show will be Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Andy Mander Show. Hope you guys enjoy what we're doing. Mander, why don't you take us home? I did find that Stephen Stills clip. It's called Treetop Flyer. It's a recording of Stephen Stills playing live. And you just take a listen to his guitar work and his song here doing this tune. It's really good. Live performance of Stephen Stills. And I figured that would be kind of cool to end the show with, although we probably should be playing Chris music, but let other shows do that. All right, Amanda, get us out of here, then we'll hear from Stephen Stills. Thank you so much for chiming in, folks.
Okay, so on behalf of my amazing co-host, Andy Kimball in California, Hollywood, myself, Amanda Love here in the UK, thank you, more importantly, to you, the listeners, for supporting us and joining our show each episode and maybe dipping in every time you fancy it. It doesn't matter to us. You're awesome. We appreciate it. Anyway, join us again on Friday and for some more banter and laughter and whatever comes our way. You never know. So have a good week, and we'll see you then. Enjoy this.
Veterans Day recently, and it got me thinking about veterans and our particular generation of them. Turns out there's a whole lot of very highly trained young fellas that came back from that war that couldn't find no work for what they learned how to do, so they had to invent a cottage industry. Because what they could do was fly right next to trees and into very dangerous situations. And there's not much call for it at United Airlines, if you know what I'm saying. So by popular demand was invented the treetop flyer. Seven dials. I don't pay taxes 'cause I never file. I don't do business that don't make me smile. And I love my aeroplane 'cause she got style. I'm a treetop fly. Bon survivor. Usually work alone. Hey. I'll fly whiskey, anything but guns. Bush league pilots that just can't get the job done. 'Cause you got to fly down in the canyons, you never see the sun. There's no such thing as an easy run. I'm a treetop flyer. I fly low, I'm in high demand. I go 15 feet over the Rio Grande. 280 knots blow the mesquite right up off the sand. And I'm seldom seen, especially when I land. I'm a treetop fly. Hey, yeah, I'm born a vagabond.
Lawyers, that's not everything breaking the law. I'm just telling the story.